ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back live with you in the studio. Taking the last few days off for Christmas. But now we're back at it, ready to close out this week today, tomorrow, and Friday. Travis, there is plenty to talk about. And today, we'll make sure to put a little extra emphasis on the Utah Utes, who wrapped up their college football season yesterday.
Yeah, good win by Utah yesterday in the heart of Dallas Bowl. So Utes finished the season off with a strong win moving forward to next season.
Yeah, look, it was a boring game in the second half. I'm not going to lie. It wasn't the prettiest, but the biggest deal is that the biggest goal is to get the win, obviously. And that's what Utah did. I try to tell people this all the time. The biggest thing, at least in my opinion, when you come down to college football bowl games, if you're not in the playoffs, it's getting that extra 3 to 4 weeks of practice for next season, especially when you're a younger team. And knowing what Utah has returning next season, this is going to do them some good. I mean, this was a solid way to end the season. I know West Virginia was down a couple of main players, including Will Grier. I get that. But at the same time, all in all, to me, that's a pretty good win for the Utes.
Yeah, you get 8 guys coming back on the offensive side of the football next season and 7 on the defensive end. And like you said, it's very important to get that extra 3 weeks of practice moving forward next year because Utah's a young team, so it helped them moving forward.
Again, we'll talk about the Utes next segment. I wish we would have gotten to see Grier in this game.
Yeah, me too.
That's what I was really looking forward to. I mean, obviously, we don't get that, but Utah gets the win. We'll talk about that next segment. As far as bowl games that are going on right now, well, how about one that ended this morning? I was making jokes about this on Steve Bordstein, great friend of the show. He joins us regularly. I was on his show this morning, and we were poking fun at the Walk-On's Independence Bowl. And the reason I was poking jokes about this is because Florida State was 6-6, probably had no business going to a bowl game. Yet they played Southern Mississippi at 11 o'clock this morning. I mean, what a total disaster season for Florida State. I mean, let's think about this. You enter the season number 3. You have the kid that I thought would win the Heisman in DeAndre Francois. He gets injured, I believe it was in the first half of the Alabama game. It was either the first half or third quarter. He gets injured, done for the season. He goes 6-6 after being a preseason number 3 with one of the best players in the country. 6-6, you lose Jimbo Fisher. He goes to Texas A&M. His replacement is Willie Taggart. So for the third time in the last 40-something years, Florida State had to name a new head coach. You get into the Independence Bowl, and you get Southern Mississippi. That's a terrible year for Florida State, isn't it?
Yeah, Wednesday at 11 a.m., you're playing in the Independence Bowl. Yeah, that's a bad season. It's a bad look for Florida State. And what can you do? You just move forward, I guess, from this point on. There's not much you can say. It's a terrible season.
It's a terrible season, and they played at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday. That was Florida State's season finale. Right now we have another game going on. It is the New Era Pinstripe Bowl. Iowa taking on Boston College. It was 7-3 Boston College at the end of the first. Iowa is taking the lead. Boston College down 10-7. They have the ball right now on Iowa's 43-yard line. The last play, Darius Wade completed a pass to Charlie Cannon for 4 yards. That gave Boston College a first down. Do you have any interest in this game at all?
Nope, none.
I don't mind this game. Boston College and Iowa's an interesting team. Don't forget, this squad annihilated Ohio State.
Yes, they did.
Destroyed Ohio State.
I didn't even know who was playing this game until I had a look at the app, the score, because I asked you who was playing in it, and I didn't know.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of college football games where, do you really, I mean, honestly, we have the schedule sitting in front of us. Even if you're a big college football fan, would you know that Arizona and Purdue are playing in the Foster Farms Bowl tonight?
Nope.
Probably not. I mean, really, you may know that Arizona and Purdue are going toe-to-toe. You don't know what bowl game it is. That's tonight, 6:30 p.m., Foster Farms Bowl, Arizona taking on Purdue. Also a game tonight, we get Texas and Missouri. That's the Academy Sports Outdoors Texas Bowl. And so the bowl games are continuing to move. I'll tell you, though, there are some fun storylines in college football, and we'll talk a bit about that. Here's my question to you. Now that UCLA's football season is done, came to a close last night with a loss to Kansas State, in which UCLA was dreadful in the second half. They didn't have Josh Rosen. He did not play in this game, but Devin Monster did. The freshman quarterback finished 21 of 34 for 294 yards and two touchdowns. If you're Chip Kelly, you were obviously watching this game. Will Josh Rosen pull at Eli Manning on draft day and refuse to play for the Cleveland Browns? That's the storyline. They said he did not play in this game. It was 100% because he was not cleared because of a concussion. I believe that. I don't know that he plays even if he was cleared. But the reason he did not play was because of a concussion. Does he pull an Eli Manning? Does he refuse to go to Cleveland, who has now clinched the number one draft pick?
Josh Rosen's one of those kids that's going to tell you how it is, and he might just be that guy to do that. Doesn't want to play there. If you read all the indications, all the reports come out, he doesn't want to go to Cleveland.
He's something else, this kid. I'll tell you, I was asked today, do I believe that Josh Rosen will go pro? Absolutely, because he is the number one pick.
Yes, he is.
I don't think there's any doubt. There's no doubt in my mind, barring some sort of injury between now and the combine or now in the draft. Now, I definitely think he is the number one pick. After everything that this kid has said, as far as how he doesn't, you know, college athletes should be paid, he doesn't agree with everything that's happened as far as the schedule and what college athletes have to go through.
I mean, the guy had a hot tub in his dorm room.
Right. After all that, if he does not leave, I would be very, very surprised. Bottom line.
Yeah, I would too.
So, a couple of fun storylines in college football. We'll touch on those in just a bit. Let's take a look at some of the other storylines circulating around the NFL. This was a hot topic yesterday. James Harrison signing with the New England Patriots. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it doesn't help him. I mean, he's only played 40 snaps. You know, he hasn't been active since week six. It's more of just a move, head game with the Steelers. That's what the Patriots do. Whenever somebody gets cut, Kenny Britt, they went after him, now James Harrison, it's not going to make a difference.
Looks as if this was done because of Marcus Gilbert's return from suspension, and that's what Mike Tomlin said yesterday when he was talking about the need to make a roster move. Teammates of James Harrison were not really happy with him. Marcus Pouncey called him out for not addressing his frustrations. It's a bad look. The Steelers are definitely not happy with James Harrison. Here's the thing. If Harrison gets cut, and he wanted to be released from every report that I have read because of his diminishing role.
Yeah.
He's only played 40 snaps over the course of the season, only played, I believe, 5 games.
Yes.
He wanted to be released. Steeler players and his teammates are only upset because he decided to sign with the New England Patriots.
So did you think when you released him he was going to go play for Cleveland or Cincinnati or the Colts? No. He's going to go play where he can win.
Does that affect his legacy in Pittsburgh?
I don't think so.
I think for the time being it does.
Yeah, they'll get over it.
Yeah, but I think in like 5-10 years from time. Look, and I'm not in any way, shape, or form comparing Harrison's legacy to Carl Malone, but I always go back to that here in the state of Utah because we are most familiar with it. Jazz fans were irate at this guy when he left and went to L.A., which the Jazz have always considered the Lakers a rival. And so he went to L.A., and Jazz fans were very angry for a very long time. But they now embrace Cora Malone as their own. And, you'd ever see pictures of Cora Malone wearing a Lakers uniform. You always see him wearing a Jazz uniform. And so it stings right now. If you're a Steelers fan, you're probably upset. I will say this. This does not help New England. In fact, this kind of solidifies my thoughts on New England's front seven. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's bad. Kyle Van Noy is their best defensive player probably on that front side. So.
Front seven's not good. And this kind of solidifies it.
They needed another guy on the outside, so
intel. They wanted intel. No one will convince me otherwise. The only reason there was a mutual interest is because James Harrison wanted to stick it to Pittsburgh, and at the same time, New England wants intel on Pittsburgh, who was their biggest threat to get to the Super Bowl. To me, it's that simple.
Yeah, and if the Steelers didn't want it to happen, they should have just held on to him.
Right, you knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, and kept him inactive because you knew once he was released what team he was going to. We all knew he was going to New England. How did Pittsburgh not know that?
That's true. It's true.
You knew it and I knew it.
Well, yeah, it seemed common sense. It seemed to be, the writing was on the wall. Let's put it that way.
You knew, yeah, he's going to go stick it to him. And how do you do that? You go to the Patriots.
The Patriots have made a couple of moves like this over the past 3 or 4 years. They've always brought
LeGarrette
in someone.
Blunt.
They did it with LeGarrette Blunt. Remember Michael Floyd last year? I thought that move was going to really work for him. He wasn't even on the active roster for the Super Bowl, even though he played a couple of regular season games for them. So, no, to me, it's a jab at Pittsburgh. It's a chance to get some intel on the Steelers. You better believe that Harrison is going to provide that in New England. And if you're a Steelers fan, you're rightfully upset because James Harrison is your guy. I get Steeler fans being upset, but I just don't believe that Harrison is going to make that much of a difference in New England. Now let's talk about a guy that is relevant today. Dez Bryant does not want to leave the Dallas Cowboys and has not thought about life with another team, but he says he understands the way the NFL works, and he's scheduled to make $12.5 million next season, and he says he will not entertain a pay cut if the Cowboys ask him to this offseason. With that being said,
goodbye.
Is it a serious conversation that Dez Bryant has played as, well, will play his last game in a Dallas Cowboy uniform? Is this his last year in Dallas if he will not entertain a pay cut?
Yes. I mean, that's a lot of money that you're paying a guy who's diminishing as a player.
Yeah, fast, too.
Yeah. There's routes where he doesn't look like he's invested anymore.
Led the Cowboys with 66 catches and 6 touchdowns. He's not going to reach 1,000 yards receiving. Really not even close to what he did between 2012 and 2014. I mean, not even close.
I mean,
he averaged 90 catches during that time.
A lot of balls in that game the other day against Seattle, he dropped that were pinpoint right on his plate that he has to catch. Yeah, he didn't catch him.
He's missed time as well between foot and knee injuries as well. Played in every game this season, which is somewhat of a shock, but you know, he's going to count $16.5 million against the cap next year.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, and he's not going to entertain a pay cut. Yeah, he may be approaching his final week as a Dallas Cowboy. I think that's possible.
I just don't see how you can bring that guy back with all that's on the salary cap with that much money.
Well, based off production, I would agree with you. He's approaching 30 years old. Really, that's a storyline to follow.
He's
going to
have to
follow.
Take a pay cut. Plain and simple.
Does he?
He won't, but they need help in a lot of places, and if he takes a pay cut, that helps.
That's a quick look at some of the storylines around the national sports front. Again, we'll talk more NFL football in just a bit as well. Schedule in the NBA, full slate of games, 5 o'clock tonight. We get Boston at Charlotte. Dallas will take on Indiana. We get Washington at Atlanta. 6 o'clock tonight, New York at Chicago. Minnesota will play host to Denver. Brooklyn at New Orleans. Toronto at Oklahoma City. That game's on NBA TV. 8 o'clock tip-off tonight, Cleveland at Sacramento. The Jazz, right here on KOAL, will take on the Golden State Warriors. David Locker on Boone will bring you that play-by-play call. Tip-off is set for 8:30 p.m., and then the Memphis Grizzlies take on the Los Angeles Lakers. Lakers are 10 games under 500. The Grizzlies are 11 games under 500. I didn't see this big of a drop for Memphis. I thought the Lakers would float around the 8 spot, 9 spot in the West. I guess they are, but the West just is not very good. Utah, on the other hand, they're on the outside looking in. Do you realize the Jazz are now 3 games back in New Orleans for the final playoff spot because they have lost 8 out of 10 games?
Yeah, they continue to struggle on the road. I mean, you get a good win at Boston, then you turn around and you lay an egg last night in Denver.
Meanwhile, I think Oklahoma City is starting to figure it out. They now won 5 straight, 8 out of their last 10. It was only a matter of time before that happened. I don't know if they climb any higher than 5 or 4. Because I like San Antonio. Houston, obviously, even though they've lost 3 straight, it's a team that is very entertaining. And then you have the Warriors. I still think you have the Warriors and everyone else. But the Western Conference, now 35 games into the season, looks a little bit different than I anticipated at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I thought the same thing with the Lakers, that they would hang around. The Clippers, I didn't think were that good. I thought the Jazz could possibly hang around. It's just you're seeing these teams float to the top and the ones that are not very good float to the bottom.
And when you say the ones that are not very good,
Sacramento.
Well, I'm looking at the playoffs. Denver, yeah. Portland, and New Orleans. I don't think
Denver can hang.
Who's going to catch them, though? The Jazz?
That's the thing. I think the Jazz are the only team that could catch Denver.
The Jazz are 3-14 on the road so far this season.
Denver 7-12.
The Jazz have a losing record, and they are still plus in the plus-minus differential.
Just got to win on the road.
Got to win on the road.
I mean, Toronto's first in the East. There you go. Well, they were, weren't they? They were a game and a half.
I think they're a game back. Well, they're one up on Boston in the loss column. The Celtics started off hot and have not played good basketball as of late. We haven't talked a lot about the Eastern Conference.
The Raptors are a good team.
Raptors are entertaining. We've got a break for just a moment. Again, we'll have some college football talk coming up here in just a moment. Also, we're going to talk some local sports. We'll give you the recap on everything happening there. It is a Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
With winter just around the corner, golfing is one sport that just doesn't come to mind. But at TK's Pro Shop, winter is the perfect time to stock up on clearance items to get you ready for spring. Just because you can't golf doesn't mean you can't be ready to. Stop into TK's Pro Shop at the Carbon Country Club.
Is your back tired after a long day of riding on your side-by-side? Alleviate the fatigue with a set of custom PRP seats from BentMetalOffroad.com. That's BentMetalOffroad.com.
Many people believe that baby teeth don't matter because they're just going to fall out. The truth is, baby teeth do matter. Good dental health in children fosters good nutrition, aids in speech development, builds self-esteem, and enables children to learn better in school without the distraction of dental pain. Dr. Markham and Dr. Lund with Price Pediatric Dental are here to make sure your child's dental health is in check, all while making it a comforting and inviting experience. Call Price Pediatric Dental today to get your child on the road to good dental health. 637-9590.
Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The Utah Utes wrapped up the football season with a 30-14 win over the West Virginia Mountaineers in the Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl yesterday afternoon. The Utes got off to a hot start and never looked back as they rolled through West Virginia. Zach Moss led the way on the ground. He accumulated 150 yards off of 20 carries while reaching the end zone one time. Ute quarterback Tyler Huntley completed 12 of 26 passes for 165 yards, no scores and no interceptions, but he did reach the end zone twice on the ground as he finished with 57 yards. Following the victory, Zach Moss sat down with the Utah Sports Radio Network and talked about getting the win.
Just getting the win was the biggest thing for us, so I think we ended on a good note, for sure. We left some things on the field today, but, I mean, we still got the win. That's the most important thing.
Finishing off another successful winning season under Coach Kyle Whittingham, Moss talked about next season and how the Utes will return the majority of their offensive line.
Definitely getting our mom back next year is going to be so big for us. DAC has done a lot of good things for us this year and a lot of spark for us. I mean, it's going to be real good to have those guys back there with me, for sure.
Utah Ute football will make its return to KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM next season. We move over to the local sports scene, and the Christmas break will come to an end today for the USU Eastern Lady Eagles as they return to the court with their 11-3 overall record. The Lady Eagles will participate in a Las Vegas preseason tournament over the next 3 days, and it will begin today with Treasure Valley Community College at 12:30 p.m. The Lady Eagles have played lights-out basketball so far this season. In fact, they've gotten off to one of their best starts in recent memory. Sitting at 11-3, the Lady Eagles will take on Lake Region State tomorrow again in Las Vegas before wrapping up the weekend trip against Grand Canyon University on Friday. Upon completing the weekend, the Lady Eagles will next take the court on January 6th. That'll be a home contest with the Salt Lake Community College Bruins, a game that'll kick off Scenic West Athletic Conference play. It will be another off day for the high school athletic scene, but tomorrow the Carbon Dino Boys basketball squad will return to action with a trip down south to Canyon View High School for the Steve Hodson Cancer Classic. While all high school teams will resume play on Friday, the Dinos will get a jump in the action. Returning to the court tomorrow, they'll take on the host school, Canyon View, in a late 8:30 start time. Friday, the Dinos will return to the court as they take on South Sevier at 12:30 p.m. before wrapping up the weekend against Panguitch at 11 a.m. Following the three non-region contests Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the Dinos' next game will be on Friday, January 5th. That'll be a region contest against Macer Prep. And we end by flipping back over to the national sports scene. And tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the Utah Jazz will make their return to the court as they take on the Golden State Warriors in a late 8:30 tip-off. The Jazz are fresh off a miniature Christmas break. And as it sits right now, the Jazz are on the outside looking into the NBA playoffs. They currently trail the New Orleans Pelicans by 3 games as Utah's 15-20. They've lost 8 out of their last 10. Again, start time for tonight's contest is scheduled for 8:30 p.m. David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Hi, this is Joe Peterson, Chancellor of USU Eastern. I'm here to brag a little bit about some of the amazing students we have representing the college. I'd like to recognize our volleyball, softball, and soccer teams for the time and service they're giving to our local elementary students by helping with reading programs and other school programs. Thank you, student athletes, for being role models to our youngest community members and for helping to make the future a little brighter because of your efforts. For more stories about the incredible student body we have here at USU Eastern, see our website, usueastern.edu.
Hello, this is Dr. Blake Hillstead from Castle Valley Orthodontics. We are a state-of-the-art orthodontic office specializing in braces and Invisalign for children, teenagers, and adults. We provide complimentary consultations to help you achieve the best smile possible. We accept most insurance plans in Carbon and Emory counties and also accept all Medicaid insurance plans. In addition, we offer flexible in-house financing at 0% interest to make orthodontic treatment fit within any budget. Call for a free consultation with me, Dr. Blake Hillstead, at 435-637-2222.
Sutherland's After Christmas Sale is going on now, but only while supplies last. All remaining winter jackets are only $12.99. Pocket-sized LED flashlights are $6.99. Get lightweight, portable 1,000 lumens LED work light only $14.99. Plus, save 15% off all in-stock space heaters. Keep your pipes safe from freezing this winter. With heat tape, choose from 5 different lengths, all on sale. Remember our feathered friends this winter. Get 20-pound bags of bird food for only $7.99. Don't miss Sutherland's After Christmas Sale.
This is Utah Utes football from Learfield.
Give it to Zach Moss, first down yardage, second level, into the open field, 40, 35, 30, he's gone, 20, 10, 5, it's a touchdown. Tyler tosses it, now keeps it to the left-hand side and walks into the end zone, touchdown. Touchdown, Tyler Huntley. Final score here at the Cotton Bowl in the Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl, 30-14.
The Utah Utes, Heart of Dallas Bowl champions.
It's true. Utah did get that win yesterday. You know, this is a game that you go back and you look at some of the positives for Utah. For me, I did not think that Tyler Huntley played all that well yesterday. And we're going to play a post-game interview with Coach Kyle Whittingham here in just a moment. Really, Zach Moss was the big bright spot. With Zach Moss, I guess you have to talk about the offensive line who did a terrific job of opening up some holes for Moss throughout this game. He finished with 150 yards and one touchdown on the ground. Just not a lot of offense for West Virginia. Again, they were without Greer. All in all, Utah did force some takeaways, which, again, it's got to be noted. I just think that when you get to the end of a season, when you get to the end of a season like this, in which it started with a lot of promise, and we can kind of go back and reflect on the Utes. Remember, they opened up the win with a win over North Dakota. They beat BYU, which turned out to be not a very impressive win. They did it. BYU was moving the ball on the final drive of the game.
Yeah, it was a sloppy game all around.
It was. They beat San Jose State, found a way to beat Arizona on the road. And I thought that Arizona win was pretty solid. Then you look at some of the shortcomings for Utah this year. A three-point loss for Stanford at home does not look all that bad. A one-point loss to USC on the road in which Coach Whittingham decided to go 4-2, going for the win instead of the tie and into overtime, does not look all that bad. I mean, those are two losses. You tack that on, we're talking about an 8-4 team going into a bowl game.
And they should have won both.
They probably should have won both. They should have beat USC.
They were up 21-3 on USC, and they were scoring at will on USC's defense, and then they just had a second-half meltdown.
Should have won that game. The 30-10 loss to Arizona State was one of the worst performances I've seen from a Whittingham coach team. That was just bad. And Arizona State was not a great team. Peaked, I guess, at that particular time. They had a couple of impressive defensive outings, but that was a terrible performance for the Utes. The Oregon loss looks bad. The Washington State loss, again, it's a one-possession loss to Washington State. I'm not saying it was a season of what-ifs. Look at the three-point loss to Washington.
They choked that one away.
Again, it was a head-scratching loss. The Utes showed promise. Did they overperform? I know your expectations at the beginning of the year, you didn't think they would go to a bowl game.
I said 5 wins.
You thought they'd get 5 wins. I thought they would get to a bowl game. I think I went 6 or 7 wins. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and listen to the show. But when we were looking at it at the beginning of the season, ESPN's ratings only gave them a favorable nod in like 3 games. I mean, they were not projected to be world beaters by any means. With that being said, I've seen enough positives to believe that it's not a terrible season for the Utes based on the low expectations, at least, that we had for them here on the show.
This team had a chance, to compete and win the Pac-12 up because there's games on that. They should have beat Washington. They had that game. They controlled it. They had the USC game.
Yep.
They
could have beat Stanford.
They had the Stanford game, so there's 9 wins or 10 wins there. And again, I think that they just underachieved again. And I just, it's one of those things with Coach Whittingham's teams where they get into these big game situations and they blow the lead in the second half.
Yeah, I don't think they underachieved because, again, my expectations were small for this team. And I think part of that has to do with the fact we didn't know exactly what to expect from Tyler Huntley, but I knew that Huntley wasn't good enough to overwhelmingly be the favorite over a senior captain who started every game for you last year, like in Troy Williams. So, to me, there was a problem at the quarterback spot, and I think Huntley can develop into something that's going to be very exciting for Ute fans, hopefully over the next couple of seasons. Needs to improve with the accuracy. I don't think he was healthy second half of the year as well, and that definitely played a factor. But all in all, I don't think it's a bad season for Utah. And I say I don't think it was a bad season because my expectations were very low for this squad. Now, on the flip side, Ute fans always want to compare what they have done to BYU. That was a bad season because BYU had a lot of expectations, a lot more high. Their expectations were higher than Utah's.
BYU was pegged to be a 10-win team.
That didn't happen.
No, not BYU. That was a disaster.
See, so... And you can't compare your... Look, the two schools should not compare themselves. Fans are going to do that. I get it. It's fine. That's what you do as fans. I understand. It's a rivalry. I'm completely neutral in that rivalry. I really... Seriously, I am. I don't favor BYU. I don't favor Utah. But based on my low expectations for the Utes, the fact that they are 7-6, should have won, could have won multiple games this season, I don't think it's a terrible season for this team. Coach Kyle Whittingham, following the victory over West Virginia yesterday, he sat down with the Utah Sports Radio Network.
Give us your big picture view of today's win. It was ugly at times, but boy, your defense played really well.
Well, they did, and it came down to controlling the line of scrimmage. I thought we owned the line of scrimmage completely on the defensive side, and for the most part on the offensive side, gave up too many sacks and weren't as sharp as we usually are, but we still rushed for nearly 200 yards and held them to 29 yards, and I thought those three senior defensive linemen played outstanding, Lowell and Flip and Kylie Fitz, and great to see him go out on that note and with that kind of performance.
It was one of those defensive performances that we're so used to with this Utah football team, even with all the injuries, especially in the defensive secondary. Well, you guys just kind of dominated the line of scrimmage, and everything else fell into place.
It does that when that happens when you dominate up front, everything does seem to fall into place, and that's where defense starts. I don't care if it's rush defense, pass defense, it all starts at the line of scrimmage, and that was really the difference in the game. And offensively, I thought we did some really good things, but then we missed on a lot of things. We had some plays that we left out there, overthrew the ball or dropped the ball, and otherwise, would have been a lot more productive on offense. But give West Virginia credit. I mean, they were playing hard on defense, but that wasn't our best game offensively, but we still just had the one turnover and put up 30 points, so not bad.
You ran it 25 times with Tyler Huntley, just 20 with Zach Moss. Would you like to see Zach get a few more touches?
Yeah, I would, and we would. But you look at Tyler, six of those were sacks, and probably another three or four were QB escapes off of design drop back pass. So really, actually, only about 15 design runs. But that's still probably maybe a little on the high side. And Zach, I think he's capable of, 25 carries easily. But he did make the most of his carries today, had over a 7-yard average.
Hey, Kyle, you've had a lot of really good running backs. I mean, a lot of them at Utah. Zach Moss seems to be about as physical a back as I can remember. I mean, you've had some physical ones, too, but he really seems to enjoy punishing backers and safeties and things like that. He says he wants to get to a 4-4 in the offseason. How good and what do you think the ceiling could be for Zach Moss?
Well, I'll tell you what, he's just a true sophomore, and he is physical. Like you said, when he lowers his pads and decides to pop you, he is as physical as we've ever. I guess Chris Mafala way back in the day was, but he was 270 pounds. Zach's only about 212, but he runs like he's 240. And he's got a high ceiling, I can tell you that much. And it's all going to come down to how hard he wants to work. Not that he's not a good worker, but if he sets his mind on it and decides to really give it everything he's got, he could be an elite back in the country.
You know, Coach, one of your guys that is usually very reliable seemed like he was just off today, and that's Mitch Wishnowsky. Was there anything happening with your partner?
Yeah, we weren't good on special teams overall. Our kickoff return was too, our kickoff coverage was too soft, given field position too many times. If our defense hadn't been playing lights out like they were, that would have been a factor in the game. And then I thought Booby Hobbs did a pretty good job in the punt return game. We came away with nearly 50 yards, and and that was positive. But, yeah, Mitch, last couple games, you know, Colorado game wasn't very good either, and so we've got to, you know, just get back to being a dominant punt team. You know, you hate to say that. You don't want to be a dominant punt team. You don't want to punt that often, but let me say efficient punt team. When we punt, we got to be more efficient than what we were today. And you know, I think we got to look at the film, but they had a nice scheme. They had three or four guys that kept backside to take away our fake that we go to backside, you know, with pretty, you know, with regularity. We run it almost every season, but they had that scoped out, and then they brought good pressure off the edge. I think bottom line, we probably need to rugby kick a little bit less and base punt a little bit more and keep teams a little more honest.
Kyle, you were missing a bunch of key players in your secondary. I mean, Jalen Johnson, Casey Hughes, Chase Hansen, obviously Marquise Blair's out, but your secondary, led by Julian Blackman, was terrific. We were just talking to Julian a minute ago about what next year could be like, assuming everybody comes back healthy. You've had good secondaries over the years, but boy, oh boy, looking at what might be next year is pretty scary for your back end.
Could be. We'll see how hard they want to work and what kind of focus they have and how they handle the off season. But I said going into the season, this group could be better than last year's, and I think I know our numbers are better. You know, we got the positive is we got every one of them back, and so that's you know, except Booby Hobbs. You know, Booby does graduate. And credit Booby today. He played nickel all season long, and with the injuries, he was forced to move outside, and we were one deep, you know, in the secondary tonight or this afternoon. And so I guess we had Kendrick Young, who was able to step in if we needed him. But it was pretty thin back there. But everyone in the country is thin this time of the year, and so there's no real point in talking about that. But to your point of, you know, the future and the potential that we have back there for the next few years, it looks pretty good, but again, it's gotta be you know, those guys decide and they're willing to put in the time and effort, and then we'll see what happens.
I'm curious about your thoughts on the progression of the offense this year and what kind of feedback you'll give to Coach Taylor during the offseason.
Yeah, we got to look at it as a whole. You know, we get after recruiting's over with, that's the next order of business, is to break down the season and look at all the cut-ups, you know, in all three phases, defense, offense, special teams. And I thought we were more in sync as the season wore on offensively. There certainly was some, you know, wasn't completely that way. There wasn't consistency throughout, but I do think we got more productive as the season went on. You know, Tyler going out a couple times with injuries, that was something that didn't help our cause. It seemed like every time he started to feel comfortable, he'd get dinged up and then come back and need to shake the rust off. But Troy Williams did a great job when he had his opportunity. But I think we're on the right track, and the players next year should certainly be more comfortable in the scheme, and you know, a year under their belt, you'd expect that. And I think, you know, hopefully this spring we'll start to see that manifest in spring football.
You lose Darren Carrington, who had a terrific year, 70 grabs, 980 yards. But you'll bring back most of that receiving core. Britton Covey comes back off a mission. I know you've got some kids coming in as well. Do you feel like that receiving core made progress this year and you've got enough playmakers next year?
I do, and we do, and we feel like we absolutely have enough playmakers next year. You had Britton Covey. That's a huge addition right there. And Britton Covey is going to flourish in this offense. You know, you put him in that slot, and he's going to be a guy that Coach Taylor is going to find all kinds of ways to get him the ball. We had, you know, some redshirt receivers this year that were redshirting or ineligible due to transfer that'll be ready next year. And you know, Brian Thompson, we get him back. He was out the last few games with that injury. And so I think this group's going to get even better next year. Of course, we get Raylan Singleton back. So I think we're going to be better next year than we were this year at wide receiver. I really do, even with the loss of Darren.
Coach, this is something that's been bothering me all year long, and I have to bring
Uh-oh,
it up.
What is
yep,
it?
And I'm going to ask you about it, and I hope you have an answer, but I just can't, for the life of me, I can't figure out why a kicker can't wear the same color shoes as the rest of the team.
Yeah, well, if you know kickers, and you know, you don't even bother to ask them that question because they march to the beat of their own drum. Now, you know, when a guy makes 14 in a row, would you make him change shoes? You know, I'm not going to make him change shoes, and so it does look a little bit interesting, but if that's how they feel they're going to be at their best, then you know, I've seen kickers wear two different shoes, you know, one a kicking shoe and then a completely different model on the left foot, and so they're all over the place. But bottom line is, if they can get guys to put it through the uprights, which Matt did tonight, he hit three field goals to add to his season record that he has here at Utah. That may never be broke. I think he's approaching 30 field goals in the season, which is outstanding.
He did. He got 30. He ended up 30 for 34 on the season and didn't miss a PAT.
Well, that's why he's the Lou Groza Award winner right there.
And why he can continue to wear two different shoes.
That's right. Yeah. He can wear whatever he wants. You got it.
Well, Kyle Whittingham wears the same color shoes. They're Under Armour shoes, and he doesn't wear two different colors. And he's now 11-1 in bowl games.
That's pretty good.
Enjoy your flight home. Enjoy a couple of days with the family. There's enough snow to go skiing at Snowbird.
Are you
now.
Sure? There's only like 30-something inches.
Well, but what do you need? You need about 6 inches. I know the way you attack those mountains.
All right. Okay, well, that's something I'm looking forward to. I'll tell you that. I hope we get more soon.
Yeah, I do too. And congratulations on the season. Thanks for everything. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Travis, at the end of that interview, Bill Riley brings up the fact that Kyle Whittingham is now 11-1 in bowl games. And look, I don't care who you're playing against. It is impressive. I'll take that. That's an impressive stat. How impressed are you by that statistic?
A little impressed.
Just a little.
Just a little bit. I mean, the one that I take away is the Alabama one where they dominated, the Sugar Bowl. I mean, that's awesome. But the rest of them, the Vegas Bowl, Poinsettia Bowl, again, Armed Forces Bowl, the Emerald Bowl.
Right. You gotta pay attention to who they're playing.
Yeah, Southern Miss.
I will tell you, though, this is what stands out to me about that particular statistic, is that, look, when you go to a bowl game, you have 3 to 4 weeks to prepare for a team.
Yeah.
And as far as Coach Whittingham goes, there's only been one slip-up, and that was a blowout loss to Boise State back in 2010.
Kellen Moore.
That was it. I mean, outside of that, and they have beat some, look, they beat Georgia Tech. I can't remember off the top of my head what Georgia Tech had done that year, but the fact is, it's Georgia Tech. They annihilated Pitt. That was Urban Meyer. So Georgia Tech the following year, and then they beat Tulsa, they beat Navy, they beat Alabama, which is by far their most impressive under Whittingham. They beat Cal. They beat Georgia Tech again. They beat Colorado State. They beat BYU in the Vegas Bowl. You beat your rival in a bowl game. They beat Indiana last year in a 2-point win in West Virginia. I mean, they have beat some pretty good name squads. Would I take a 6-6 record over an 11-1 if it meant that I had, you know, a chance to win a national championship if I was playing in the BCS title game or if I was in the college football playoff? Well, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, he's 11-1. Give the guy a little bit of credit. I think it's a pretty impressive stat.
He's won the games that he's played in, so
yeah,
kudos.
Won postseason games, which only develops more momentum. Got a break for just a moment. We'll come back, talk some NFL football when we return.
Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy, adjacent to Castleview Urgent Care, will open this fall. At Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy, they offer home delivery as well as a convenient drive-through window. The pharmacists and pharmacy techs at Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy are there to help you get your prescriptions filled and make sure you understand how you're supposed to take it to get you on track to better health. Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy, great service with a smile.
Feeling stressed out lately? It might be because of your slow internet connection. According to recent studies, delays in loading web pages and videos increase our heart rate and produce a level of stress equivalent to watching a horror film. Let Emory Telcom help reduce your stress level. With e-fiber from Emory Telcom, you'll get the highest internet speeds available. Internet speeds up, stress levels down. Fast downloads and TV like no other. Lower your stress level today and call Emory Telcom 613-9605.
Does your IT support company keep you safe by automatically checking your backups every day? Keep you in contact by automatically checking your email systems every morning? Keep you running by checking your Windows services, internet ports, and network connections every few minutes? Keep you protected by checking for hacker attacks and checking your antivirus systems each day? Hi, this is John from Maxfield Technology. We do all this and more. Give us a call today at 801-900-6393 and save yourself hours of downtime and frustration trying to maintain your business systems on your own.
Pierce Oil Company, Golden West Industries, and Swift Stop and Shop are honored to join with Castle Country Radio in recognizing the special residents of Carbon and Emory counties who reside in assisted living home or a skilled nursing centers. With a beautiful poinsettia, the holiday season is a perfect opportunity to thank those that have contributed so much to make Castle Country the wonderful place it is. Wishing you the merriest of Christmas from Pierce Oil Company, Golden West Industries, and Swift Stop and Shop. Proudly serving Eastern Utah since 1972.
You got Big Dave here with Justin Kennedy from the Auto Farm Price Auto Group. Justin, it's time to start talking about a new dealership in town, is it not?
Yeah, we are open for business at the new store over on 811 Westwood Boulevard. We are open for business, service, parts, sales. If you're in the market for a vehicle, you need your car serviced, you got a breakdown, don't forget about the brand new dealership, Auto Farm Price Ford, 811 Westwood Boulevard, right off Highway 6. Please come down and see us. We'll be having a grand opening soon.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes a strong and one.
Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Let's talk NFL football. We get down to week 17. Every game is on Sunday, right? No Saturday games.
No Saturday and no Sunday night game.
No Sunday night game. The NFL canceled Sunday night game. Harbaugh didn't like that too much, did he?
He didn't, and he got all divisional matchups.
Yep. Playoff picture is going to be finalized about 6 o'clock on Sunday night. We're going to know exactly who's going where, who's playing who. Here's what you need to know about the NFL playoffs. Is we're going to take a look at every scenario here on this segment. The Patriots have clinched the AFC East in a first-round bye. The Steelers have clinched the AFC North in a first-round bye. Home field advantage is still up for grabs. The Jaguars and the Jaguars have also clinched, right?
Jaguars cannot fall below 3. They are the 3.
Which is amazing considering how horrible they looked on Sunday against the 49ers. But they are 10-5. They cannot fall below the Kansas City Chiefs. So they are 3.
They are 3.
They're locked in.
Locked into the 3.
And then the Kansas City Chiefs have won the division, so they're the 4 seed.
They are locked into 4.
Okay. That's what we know in the AFC. The NFC, the Eagles have clinched the NFC East home field advantage along with it. The Vikings have clinched the NFC North. The Vikings haven't clinched a first-round bye, though. I was under the impression before doing the research for this that the Vikings had clinched a first-round bye. They haven't. We'll get to that in a second. The Rams have clinched the NFC West, cannot fall any lower than 4. The Saints and the Panthers have secured playoff berths, but neither have won the division yet.
Correct.
So that's what takes us to the final week. And there's a playoff race brewing between the Falcons and the Seahawks. If the Seahawks win and the Falcons lose, the Seahawks get in. It's that simple. Seattle plays host to Arizona at CenturyLink Field. That's an afternoon game. We don't know if that game is going to mean anything at the start because Carolina will play Atlanta. Now, there's a great chance Atlanta loses that game.
Yeah, Carolina has everything to play for. So does the Falcons. But the way the Falcons have played this year, the Panthers have been impressive to me this year. And I like the Panthers in that game.
Okay, so let's start looking at the scenarios. The Minnesota Vikings, we're going to start with them because, again, I was under the impression that they had clinched the number 2 seed. That is not the case. The Vikings can clinch a first-round bye if they win or tie, if the Panthers lose or tie, if the Saints win or the Rams win. That's how they clinch because they will own the tiebreaker over the Rams regardless. That helps their strength of schedule if the Rams get a win. If the Saints win, the Saints cannot catch the Vikings. Remember, we had some really entertaining football in the NFC there for a while. If the Saints get a win, it doesn't matter. They're in. A Panthers loss also gets them in. So the Vikings have pretty much clinched that number 2 spot, but they haven't just yet. They get the Chicago Bears, by the way.
Which they will destroy.
I would think. And they're doing it with Case Keenum at quarterback.
Which is surprising.
Maybe it's time to give Case Keenum a little bit of credit. Although I think they're doing it with defense.
Yes, they are.
Let's take a look at the New Orleans Saints. Okay, the Saints are going to close out the season taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's who the Saints get. Yeah, it is an important game for the Saints because if they win, they'll clinch the NFC South. Or they clinch if Atlanta beats Carolina. Or they clinch with a tie and a Panthers tie. Those are the scenarios for the Saints. So it's very simple. You win and it's over. You win the division.
Yeah, beat a crappy Buccaneers team and you're the division champ.
Here's what's crazy. If they lose, they could fall all the way to 6.
Yes, so you could go from anywhere from being a 2 to a 3 to a loss being a 6.
Right, they can drop all the way to 6. That's still a possibility.
Which would lock them possibly in a matchup with the Rams.
Negative. They can't drop six. I'm looking at the scenarios right now. They can't drop six.
Five is as far as they can drop.
Yeah,
right?
Because okay. I mean, I guess if Atlanta wins, it doesn't matter. The Saints are still going to be a game up on them, so they could drop to five. They can't drop to six.
Okay.
Which means that they would, if they do lose, we could get the Panthers and the Saints again. I mean, that's possible. I don't know.
Panthers would jump up. Yeah.
So it looks as if the sixth seed, it is Atlanta or Seattle. It's that simple. Because Carolina, New Orleans, doesn't matter. They can't fall below. Atlanta cannot get to 11 wins. Seattle cannot get to 11 wins. That's irrelevant.
They're the six.
The Panthers, if they win and the Saints lose, they win the division. Or if the Saints tie. If they tie and the Saints lose, they win the division. They can clinch a first-round bye. Now, this is what threw me off a little bit here. The Panthers can get a first-round bye still. If they win, the Saints lose or tie, the Vikings lose, and the Rams lose or tie. So a lot has to happen, but it is possible that Carolina could still get a first-round bye.
Yeah, because we already know one of those teams, the Rams, are resting all their players. So
right, I don't expect the Rams to win on Sunday.
No, I don't either. So that scenario is in play for them. So, yeah, Carolina, a lot going on for them.
I don't think that the Vikings are going to lose.
No.
But I do think that there's a pretty solid chance that they get a win over Atlanta. So that's interesting. Now, the Falcons can clinch a playoff berth. It's this simple. They win, or the Seahawks lose, they're in. They own the tiebreaker over Seattle. So it's that simple for Atlanta. Win and you're in, Seahawks lose and they're in, or they could tie and the Seahawks tie and they get in. Now, if they lose and the Seahawks win, things shake up a little bit, and we would get a couple of division matchups in the first round. That means that we would get New Orleans and Carolina and the Rams and the Seahawks. That's what the NFC playoffs could bring us in the wild card round.
Crazy. I like those matchups, though. I think it favors the Rams because we just seen what they did to Seattle. And I don't know if you want to play New Orleans, so with Drew Brees.
I wouldn't want to play New Orleans.
No.
That's why the Saints win was so important over Atlanta this past week, because a win there solidified a playoff spot, well, made sure that the Saints could not drop into that sixth spot, because I don't think you want to go to L.A. I don't think anyone wants to travel to L.A. Now, again, the other scenario that we haven't really talked about here is what if the Rams drop? What if the Rams end up dropping to the number four seed, and then we get some other crazy scenarios? I guess the Saints could still play the Rams. See, that's where it gets shaky. We know who the seven teams competing are. A bunch of other scenarios could be thrown in, but we know who the seven teams are. On the outside looking in right now, Seattle.
If you're the Rams, I prefer to be the four seed, because you get a home game if you're three or four anyway, and if Minnesota locks up to two, I'd rather go play Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's pretty clear, though, right?
We
know which seven teams are in the running. AFC's a little bit different. New England, they clinch home field advantage with a win or a Steelers loss. It's that simple. The Steelers clinch home field in the AFC with a win and a Patriots loss. Or if they tie and the Patriots lose, they could clinch. Throw the tie scenario out.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen.
And I don't think either one of those guys are losing Sunday.
Now you take a look at where we're sitting as far as the playoffs go for the Baltimore Ravens. Again, it's an important game for Baltimore, considering that Harbaugh's upset about the schedule change. Again, they have the Bengals, but the Bengals did ruin Detroit's chances of getting into the playoffs. Baltimore will clinch a playoff spot if they win or tie, or the Bills lose or tie, or the Titans lose or tie. That's how Baltimore gets in.
Tennessee is playing Jacksonville, which Jacksonville said they're resting all their players.
Yeah, they played terrible against San Francisco, by the way.
Yes, they did.
So I would expect Baltimore to get in. Tennessee still has a chance to clinch a playoff berth. All they need to do is win or tie. And Buffalo loses or ties, or the Chargers lose and tie. And then a Bills loss and a Chargers loss means Tennessee gets in. So the Titans still do control their own destiny. They win the tiebreaker over Buffalo and the Chargers based on best win percentage in conference games. That's why they would get in if they end up with the same record as the Chargers or Bills.
That Bills loss on Sunday was devastating. And the game that they played, Peterman, is going to be the difference why they don't get in.
Yeah, that's really it. I'm glad you bring that up. That's why.
Yeah, you in the middle of the season in a playoff race, you put Peterman in it, and he threw five picks in the first half, and that's the reason why you're not making the playoffs.
Over Tyrod
Taylor. So the longest drought in NFL postseason history continues with the Buffalo Bills.
Now the Chargers get in if they win, and the Titans lose, and the Bills lose. Or if they win, and the Titans lose, and the Ravens win. That's how the Chargers can get in.
And that opening day loss to Denver with the missed field goal will come back.
They had multiple games like that this season. The Chargers hold the tiebreaker over Buffalo based on head-to-head win percentage. So that's how the Los Angeles Chargers, could get in. Again, if they win and the Titans lose, or the Bills and the Bills lose, or they win and the Titans lose and the Ravens win, that's how they get in. A couple of scenarios for the Chargers. And then Buffalo gets in if they win and the Ravens lose, or they win and the Chargers lose and the Titans lose, or Buffalo wins and the Chargers lose and the Titans lose. That's basically how, Buffalo ties and the Chargers lose and the Titans lose. That's how Buffalo gets in. There's still some scenarios in which the AFC looks completely different right now than the NFC. Like, we know the seven teams competing, and there's an outside chance that Seattle gets in. But for the most part, we know who's going to be playing who, who's going to be going where. That's not the case in the AFC. The AFC's crazy going into the final week.
It's going to be interesting what happens in that Tennessee-Jacksonville game, because Tennessee hasn't looked great all year, but Jacksonville's going to rest their starters, but Tennessee—I just don't think Tennessee's that good. I still think they might lose that game.
Yeah, I'm sure that segment is clear as mud to the listeners out there. Hey, we're out of time on this edition of the show. Before we end, Nike doing what Nike does best, creating some silly uniforms. Which, by the way, we talked a lot about Kobe Bryant last week. He designed these alternate uniforms for the Lakers. Gave a nod to himself. They're snake-skinned. I guess the Lakers asked Kobe to design some alternate uniforms, and he decided to give himself a nod.
Black snake-skinned, his numbers on it. Yeah, thanks, Nike.
Well,
those Jazz ones are awful.
Every team has done this.
Yes.
LeBron designed Cleveland's.
I don't even know.
They're like, ode to the city. Every team kind of has a nod to the city, except for the Rockets and the Lakers. Kobe gave an ode to himself. The Jazz, if you haven't seen the Jazz jerseys yet, think the Houston Astro throwbacks as a basketball uniform. You can log on to our Facebook page, Castle Country Sports Radio. Tell me what you think of those uniforms. I think they're hideous. They're terrible.
And the court is not much better.
Yeah, the Jazz also have an alternate court that will coincide with these uniforms. Get on the Facebook page. Tell me what you think of those. Out of time today. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. He is Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Great to be back live with you in the studio. Stay safe. We are out.